I am now going to turn the meeting over to Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and council members. As you know, behind tab five, I've doubled it, so I'm going to try and go twice as fast. you have information on the hearing committee's work. We have two basic council action items. One, we wanted to have NOAA General Counsel and the Northeast Regional Office provide an overview of the lawsuit, as well as to review the letter that was sent to the council. There were some things that were brought forward in that they were asking the council and the committee to consider certain things in the specifications, as well as trying to move forward quickly in a timely manner with our Amendment 5. We also have some initial actions with the fishery specification process and a few motions that we'd like to bring to the full council for their consideration as we begin to develop the specifications. We also will have a recommendation for priorities from the committee that I'll also want to bring, make the council aware of. So with that being said, I'd like to turn it over to Gene Martin, who will give us an overview of the lawsuit, and then I guess he'll turn it over to the regional office for a overview of the letter.
All right, thanks, Doug. Actually, I'm going to pass the buck even further. I introduced some of the issues regarding the lawsuit and the remedial order in my report on yesterday. I'm going to let Mitch summarize from the legal context the court's opinion and its subsequent remedial order that was issued to NIMP, to National Marine Fisheries Service. It doesn't actually obligate the council. It obligates us to recommend things to the council. Mitch McDonald, to my right, is a colleague in my Office of NOAA General Counsel in Gloucester. I'm finally getting some help with council issues, and he was directly involved with the remedial order and the litigation. I was not, so he's better suited to giving this overview. And then after he's done, we'll turn the time over to Carrie Nordine, as you said, to give an overview of the letter that we sent to the council with respect to the remedial order. Mitch?
Thank you, Gene. Just as a recap, Gene outlined yesterday the initial decision by the court in the matter of Flaherty v. Bryson, or now Blank. And in that order, Judge Kessler found that the agency had not sufficiently considered whether the council's decision about stocks in the fishery complied with the Magnuson-Stevens Act. The agency failed to consider whether the fishery management plan bycatch to the extent practicable. And then also, that was in terms of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And then concerning NEPA, the agency had not considered a range of alternatives for the ABC control rule, minimizing bycatch to the extent practicable, and then also concerning accountability measures. Subsequent to the order, the plaintiffs and the agency attempted to set able to, and then Judge Kessler issued a remedial order. And she ordered the agency to do a number of things. The first thing that she ordered is to remand Amendment 4 back to the agency for reconsideration of the issues that were not sufficiently considered. Vacated Amendment 4 for a one-year period pending the agency's compliance measures, and it's still it's still unclear what may happen at the end of that one-year period, but she has retained jurisdiction over this matter and will be monitoring it and making further determinations. She also ordered that the agency send a letter of recommendation to the council concerning recommending that the council consider whether river herring should be named as a stock in the fishery, and then outlined information that she wants the council to consider when making that determination. The order specifically refers to the 2012 ASMFC River Herring Stock Assessment Report and Peer Review Report, the National Marine Fisheries Service's 2011 finding that listing river herring as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act may be warranted, and the 2007 Shad Stock Assessment Report and its Peer Review Report. And alternative set 9 in the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council's Amendment 14 draft environmental impact statement. And then finally, a copy of her opinion. In addition to that, she ordered that within 1 year's time from her order was issued, the remedial order was issued on August 2nd, that the agency file with the court a supplemental explanation setting forth its consideration of whether the Atlantic herring fishery management plan minimizes bycatch to the extent practicable, and then further ordered to consider a reasonable range of alternatives for minimizing bycatch to the extent practicable, reasonable alternatives to the current accountability measures for the fishery, including monitoring alternatives, and last, to the interim ABC control rule for the Atlantic herring fishery, at least one of which shall be based on the most recent best available science for setting ABC control rules for herring and other forage fish. And then, in addition, the agency is responsible for updating the court at the six-month mark. The agency has responded to the first part of the remedial order in its letter of recommendation to the council, and I want to turn that over now to Carrie to review that letter.
So as Mitch described, the court basically found three general procedural deficiencies. In regarding the first deficiency was the stock in the fishery definition. And as Mitch described, we were required to submit a description to the court about our consideration of that definition and a letter to the council requesting that the council consider in an amendment designating river herring and shad as stocks in the fishery. That letter is in your meeting packet, and it has a date of August 31st. At its June meeting, the Mid-Atlantic Council adopted a motion to consider designating river herring and shad as stocks in the fishery for Amendment 15 to the mackerel squid butterfish FMP. In our August 31st letter, we encouraged this council to collaborate with the Mid-Atlantic Council as well as the ASMFC in its consideration of the need for federal conservation management for river herring and shad. River herring and shad have unique management challenges, and your consideration of federal management for river herring and shad is an opportunity to engage management partners and stakeholders in a holistic management of these species. So that was the first deficiency. The second deficiency found by the court was compliance with National Standard 9. And to that, as Mitch explained, we were required to send a letter to the council recommending that it consider a range of alternatives to minimize bycatch. And we're also required to submit an explanation to the court describing how the herring FMP minimizes bycatch to the extent practicable. So again, the letter is your August 31st letter in your packet. And in that letter, we talk about Amendment 5 to the herring FMP. And that amendment currently contains a range of alternatives to minimize bycatch. Therefore, it's our recommendation that Amendment 5 should explain why the range of alternatives considered is reasonable and how measures adopted by the council as part of Amendment 5 minimize bycatch to the extent practicable in the herring FMP. And then to the third finding in the court, I'll spend a little more time on that because that's sort of the issue before you today. And that relates to consideration of the ABC control rule in AMs. So what the court found is that the EA for Amendment 4 did not adequately consider a range of alternatives for ABC control rule or AMs, and NIMS was ordered to send a letter to the council asking the council that it consider an adequate range of alternatives for those two issues. And specifically, the EA for Amendment 4, it compared the proposed action to the no action. And if you'll recall, Amendment 4 brought the Herring FMP into compliance with ACL and AM requirements. So in that case, the no action alternative was in violation of MSA requirements. The court concluded, because of that, that that was not a reasonable range of alternatives. So in the court explained further that the council did consider alternatives for ABC control rule, such as the 1 year, the 3 year, and the 5 year average of recent catch. And the council has also considered alternatives for the AMs, such as a lower threshold to close a directed fishery in a management area, but those alternatives were not analyzed in the EA for Amendment 4. So moving forward, in order to comply with the court order, the NEPA document for the specifications needs to analyze a range of alternatives for the ABC control in the current AMs. In the final rule for Amendment 4, we stated that a new ABC control rule, could, if it could be developed following the 2012 stock assessment, it would be done in the 2013-15 specifications. The process to comply with the court order regarding ABC control rule is progressing. As you're all aware, that SSC considered different approaches for the ABC control rule and made a recommendation to you. Moving forward, we need to ensure that the range of alternatives is analyzed in the NEPA document for the specifications. There are currently three AMs in the herring fishery: a management area closure, an ACL overage deduction, and the haddock catch cap. Now, the haddock catch cap deals primarily with managing haddock catch. So because it doesn't concern herring, the specifications don't need to analyze a range of alternatives for that AM. But it does need to analyze a range of alternatives for the other two AMs. For example, it could consider adjusting the management area closure threshold from 95%, either higher or lower. It could modify the area management closure measure to prohibit the retention of herring after 100% of the catch of a sub-ACL is achieved, or it could adjust the magnitude of an overage deduction. A range of alternatives for ABC control rule and AMs has been considered by the council in the past, as the court recognized. But to comply with the court order again, we just need to ensure that that type of consideration is included in the NEPA analysis. Now, regarding the timeline, for the ABC control rule in the AM analysis, the court ordered a completed NEPA analysis by August 2013. So in general, a NEPA analysis is completed just prior to the final rule. If the NEPA analysis is an EA, the council could take final action in November or as late as January, and we should have a completed EA by August. If the NEPA analysis is an EIS, and the council takes final action in January, the timing is a little trickier, but we would just need to move forward and complete it as soon as possible. Just in general, we in the regional office feel that the court's decision is a positive one. It allows us to address the procedural deficiencies that the court found in ongoing herring actions without having to redo Amendment 4. And it recognizes the importance of the council process to address these deficiencies. Be happy to answer any questions.
Mary Beth.
We had a committee meeting and had a discussion of this, and I thought that Carrie explained it very well. But when I read through the letter, one question did come up. This reference to considering a range of AMs in the specification package, and then in the letter it says, the last sentence of that paragraph, if during the specification process a new herring AM is identified, implementation of that new AM would be considered in a future framework or amendment. So is our task then to only analyze in the specification package? and then implement. I mean, that's what it says. So I'm just seeking clarification on that.
So the court order specifically said to analyze a range of alternatives for current AMs. And our current regulations give us the authority to modify existing AMs through our specifications process, but we don't have the authority to create a new AM, something that we hadn't considered before. So in this process, we need to analyze or arrange for the current AMs, the ones I ran through. If through that consideration, a new AM that we haven't thought about comes up, I think we would just note that and implement that through a future action, a framework or an amendment. But we don't have the mechanism to do it through the specifications, and the court isn't ordering us to come up with a whole new AM.
I think, just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, I think the committee may have been a little confused last week. I think we were thinking we needed to come up with additional AMs, and they need to be analyzed with specification packages. You know, as your motions to that effect, we've talked a little further about maybe even expanding on that, but it sounds like we don't really need to do that at this point.
I think the motions that were made at the committee meeting are consistent with the court order and what we were anticipating looking at in the specifications package. Additionally, I think your motions just spoke to the management area closure threshold. I think we'd also want to consider adjustments to overage deduction. So I think the motions are consistent with the court order.
You said the court order said we need to analyze our current AMs, and it's just unclear to me why we would be adding additional AMs to a specification package that can't implement them and would have to go into future action. I'm still not quite sure.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions. First one, did NIM send a letter to the Mid-Atlantic asking them to consider river herring and shad as part of their mackerel fishery? That's the first question. Or did the court?
We did not send a letter to the Mid-Atlantic. The lawsuit specifically dealt with the herring FMP, not the mackerel squid.
Okay. So then I assume the Mid-Atlantic acted on their own initiative, not as a result of a lawsuit. So my question then is, when you look at, there's no way that both the Mid-Atlantic and our council could include river herring and shad as part of the mackerel fishery in one council and herring fishery in the other. Wouldn't you have to, at some point, if both councils decided to include it in the fishery, you'd have to designate one council as the management authority?
You're right. Two councils wouldn't be the primary lead, but only one would be. But I think we were thinking, as part of this conversation, both councils working together with ASMFC, by collaborating, you get a better idea of what management is necessary, is needed, what it should look like. And through that process, hopefully it will become obvious if federal management is necessary, which council might be the better council to be the primary management, and in which FMP should it reside in, or should it be its own FMP? That's another question.
And would there also be an option that it's managed now by the ASMFC, so no federal management. Is that an option, a third option?
That certainly would be a third option. I think going into it, everyone needs to consider what is the existing management, and is there, given the level of information, the scale of information, what we know, is there a need for federal, for conservation management in federal waters? The answer to that question may be no, but there needs to be an explicit consideration of that. And if the answer is yes, then you'd move forward. What would federal management look like? Its own FMP, stock in the fishery, those types of things.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carrie, you said that the court order mandated a range of alternatives for minimizing river herring bycatch, and that one pathway to deal with that would be to simply better explain what was in Amendment 5 in terms of river herring bycatch minimization. If I recall the 5 where we ended up, we have improved monitoring, possibly improved reporting of any bycatch, but the only minimization action that we took was to commit to setting a river herring cap in the future, if I recall. Is that different from your recollection, and what are we going to explain with regards to that mandate?
Well, the court order is to minimize bycatch. It doesn't specify river herring bycatch. So as with any amendment, when it's put together and then comes to the agency for review and approval, we review it in terms of National Standard 9. Does it minimize bycatch to the extent practicable? I think there are some measures, as you mentioned, in Amendment 5. There is a future river herring catch cap. There's also some slippage measures. There's also some proposed measures for bringing all the catch aboard and groundfish closed areas. So we would consider all of those things in total when it came to the agency for review and approval. And then also we have a one-year deadline to submit that report to the court about how the herring FMP in total minimizes bycatch. So that would be all part of it. So I think at this point Amendment 5 is the best vehicle for that, and we would just need to consider, and the amendment should be explicit, how it does minimize bycatch.
I have Rick Robbins and Doug Rao.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Paul Howard, important question that we should all be thinking about, namely, if this is going to be managed through the council process, how should it be most effectively addressed? And obviously, you know, it's going to require a coordinated approach. But our council was considering this question actively in the development of Amendment 14. And as we came to the conclusion of that action, we were advised by General Counsel that if we were going to make a decision about whether or not to include river herrings as a stock in the fishery, that that would in fact need to be done through a separate following action. And to that end, we agreed at the time to initiate Amendment 15. We're going to begin scoping this fall. I believe they just had an organizational webinar to get that started before scoping, but I think one of the key questions that will be addressed through that early stage of the process will be precisely what Paul has asked, namely, how should the council and councils move forward to address this question? Should there be a joint plan? If they're identified as a stock in the fishery, you've got significant overlap between some of these fisheries, namely between our squid, mackerel, and butterfish FMP and your Atlantic herring FMP. So there are a lot of questions like that I think we need to be anticipating, and as we go into the scoping process, that'll be one of the key questions. And I would look forward to that certainly being a coordinated approach. I think our staff obviously will be in close contact with yours as we get into the early stages of that.
Doug.
Yeah, thank you. Gary, just to clarify your response to Mary Beth concerning that one statement on the third page. The way I understood it, you said that we can modify our current ACLs in the specifications process accountability measures in the specifications process. For example, we could change the 95% closure to 90% or to 97% or something in the specifications process. But if we came up with something completely different, such as a closed area as a new specification, that would take a framework. That's where you bring in the work of implementing something new in a framework. Is that what you were talking about?
That's correct. Whatever the new measure would be, yes, we'd have to see if it was within the existing authority, and if not, it could be implemented through a future action. And again, the court's just ordering us to analyze a range of alternatives for the existing, the current AMs.
Doug, the items that you were talking about under Herring priorities, those primarily deal with how some of these issues will be addressed in
Yes. We had a motion that clarified what we wanted to go in, have go the specifications process. What we were going to address in the specifications process. And then you, there had been a draft of the priorities that had been developed and sent to us, and we made we suggested a modification.
My thinking was that since, you know, by going to those, we will revisit the discussion, that maybe we could move on. I don't know what your planned order was for items to come up, but it seems to me that we're going to get back to this discussion when you have those items for us to decide on.
That is certainly true. I'll tell you what my was once we were through with questions here, I was just going to verbally make the full council aware of that motion and leave it at that, and then we were going to go to a presentation by Lori on the specifications process. And the only reason we were doing it that way was just to clarify for the council what we were going to go put in the specifications process.
I was trying to tactfully suggest that we actually do that at this point in time, and then revisit the questions when we have to make those motions.
See, do you want me to read the motion?
Sure. I'm trying to keep us moving along with that, knowing that we're going to come back and people can ask questions on those on that motion.
Okay.
At the time that it is presented as a motion. You're just giving it now for informational purposes?
Yes.
Okay, I see Terry and then Dave Gaito.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to provide a little context to the discussion the committee had last week, is we jumped, as this council is, right into the priorities following Kerry's presentation and some advice that we received that the spec process should be standalone. And we prioritized it, and then we went on with the rest of the development of the of our recommendations following that. So,
Dave,
I had a couple questions here. I'm going to try to read this judgment, but I'm not a lawyer, and I don't understand some of these things. Is it a range of alternatives or a reasonable range of alternatives? Can somebody tell me which one it is?
It's a reasonable range of alternatives.
And how is that defined? Is there a number? Is it?
Well, it depends. the court. It depends on the context. In the court, in the particular case at hand, when the ABC control rule was being considered previously, looked at. Status quo is one of the council was looking at status quo as one of the alternatives, and then another ABC control rule. And the court said, and because the old status quo ABC control rule did not comply with the Magnuson Act, the court said that was not a reasonable range of alternatives because you couldn't go back to an unlawful ABC. So that was that was not a reasonable range of alternatives. So it could have been that if you had a legal option and another option, that two alternatives were reasonable. So it depends on the on the context.
Okay, even if the second alternative is considered by the council to be unreasonable, as long as it's not illegal, it's still reasonable.
You considered, the council would have considered pardon me? You're saying the council would have considered alternatives and then decided chosen between the two alternatives. And then that would be, that would be considered in the environmental impact statement or the environmental assessment, and then the court would look at that.
Okay, I think. And then this analysis, how detailed is this analysis? Is it by gear type? Is it by fishery? Is it, in other words, is it by permit category? How much analysis has to be done here to satisfy this? You have to analyze. What's the definition of analyze?
What analysis are you talking about?
Well, it says that apparently we failed to analyze sufficient NEPA alternatives. And I'm trying to figure out what it is that the council to satisfy this request. AMs dramatically differently. You know, so if you close the fishery at 95% and have a 2,000-pound bycatch, that alternative affects the category, the larger vessels, the A and B boats, pretty dramatically. I mean, they can't fish on 2,000 pounds a day, but it allows the whiting fishery to continue. If you close the fishery at 100% and you say nobody can retain a herring after that, that affects pretty much every fish in the North Atlantic, because every fish now and then. So that's my question: is how far do you have to carry this?
No, and this order is not adding additional requirements that don't already exist in the law under NEPA or anywhere else. This is just saying you have to conduct. Look at these additional reasonable range of alternatives, but it's not adding an additional burden that already doesn't exist for all of the EAs and EISs that we do. All of those things are somewhat subjective. The kinds of things that you're describing, if they're important for a decision maker to know about and deciding, and for the council to know about and deciding which alternative to pick, then that's what should be analyzed. It's not, you know, it's the whole concept of NEPA is to provide sufficient enough information that decision makers can make a reasonable call as to what might be the best approach from an environmental perspective of what they're trying to do. There is no, you know, objective 5-page requirement for analysis. We do this all the time with everything that we do, and it really isn't changing that construct. Just because we have an order that requires us to do it.
Okay, that's helpful. The last one is, to this extent practicable. Again, I'm not quite sure I understand what kind of justification has to be provided. I mean, we have alternatives in Amendment 5 that, to me, are justifiable, that we've met that standard. And we just have to say that in the analysis and then say why we think we've met it, or it just, like, again, a little more information so I understand what we're trying to do here.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, practicable is suggest kind of cost benefit of analysis into what's reasonably possible, how much does it affect the fishing boats that are required to do it. It's a balancing of those kinds of concerns, and there needs to be a direct analysis of what the what practicability means in the context of this fishery.
Paul Howard, then I'm going back to Doug.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a very quick question. Determining whether or not the river herring and shad should be a stock in the complex of either mackerel or herring, that's got to be an amendment. In other words, we're doing priorities tomorrow, and if we're going to start the NEPA process for an amendment, I'd like to know if we have to do that or if we can sit down with the Mid-Atlantic and sit down with ASMFC and determine if it's best to stay with ASMFC, consider it as National Standard 9 bycatch in the fishery for the mackerel and herring. If we could do that by a working group, I'd rather do that than start the NEPA process. So the question is, do we need to start an amendment to determine whether or not river herring and shad is a stock in the herring fishery?
Well, I guess I defer to legal guidance. My initial take would be, no, you don't have to start an amendment before you determine whether you want to undertake an amendment. You do some analysis or have some discussion, and maybe doing it along with the ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic would be an appropriate way to do it, because you have to have that conversation anyway, and then decide whether they should be stocks in the fishery, and if so, the best mechanism to do that. But I'll defer to Gene and Mitch to see if they think that that's compliant with the
remedy. I think that's right. I mean, if you could have some sort of joint discussion of this with respect to what are the things you should look at in terms of determining whether this should be a stock in the fishery or not, and then decide whether there's the will to go forward. Now, as I understand it, the Mid-Atlantic has already done this. They've initiated an amendment to consider this. So, that part of it from their perspective has already been done.